Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Day two of Red Hen. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders was back at work yesterday holding her first White House press briefing since she and her party were shooed out of Red Hen. And
they actually went to a restaurant across the street then.
Yeah, and
were treated fine.
Well,
and fairly.
But according, Mike Huckabee said that the proprietor and some of the patrons sort of followed them to the next restaurant.
Oh my God.
So I, you know, the whole,
with signs?
Well, I don't know. They
hey,
had time.
Let's make a sign. Who's got a Sharpie and some cardboard?
But, so because the characterization of the left was, yeah, this is no big deal. And owner handled it very politely and discreetly. And then there's other story. I can't verify it, but it was reported that, actually the proprietor and some other patrons sort of chased them to the next restaurant they went to after they were thrown out of Red Hen.
Right, yeah. He said that, yeah, the owner organized a group of people to yell and scream at them at the other restaurant.
Sure. I mean, you know, nothing like rounding up a posse for dinner.
Jeez.
Sarah Sanders saying this.
We want money for our cheese board.
Many by now have heard that I was asked to leave a restaurant this weekend where I attempted to have dinner with my family. My husband and I politely left and went home. I was asked to leave because I work for President Trump. We are allowed to disagree, but we should be able to do so freely and without fear of harm. And this goes for all people, regardless of politics. Some have chosen to push hate and vandalism against the restaurant that I was asked to leave from. A Hollywood actor publicly encouraged people to kidnap my children. And this weekend, a member of Congress called for people to push back and make clear to those serving their country and this administration that they are not welcome anywhere, anytime, for anything. Healthy debate on ideas and political philosophy is important, but the calls for harassment and push for any Trump supporter to avoid the public is unacceptable. America is a great country, and our ability to find solutions despite those disagreements is what makes us unique.
Well, I don't know how to break this to you, Sarah, but no justice, no peace.
Oh,
now, no justice, no sleep. Maxine Waters, she does not agree.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them.
Yeah, so
yeah, and
she wants the public targeting of the Trump administration.
She does, but she came forward late last night and apologized, and we'll get it for you shortly, but saying, oh, I didn't mean any, I meant no wrong by this. I didn't mean people to be violent against anybody. So
well,
she's trying to walk it back.
She didn't say violent. She said, you know, publicly, you know, target them for in the same way that Sarah Sanders was targeted, meaning make it uncomfortable, boo them like Christian Nielsen or Pam Bondi was booed at a public place. Try and shoo them, you know, draw attention to them, shoo them out, shame them, the shame mob. That's what she means.
Yeah, but so who's in charge of restoring civility here? Because everyone, you know, on the left, they're saying this morning, oh, it starts at the top with the president, and President Trump created all of this, that it's his fault. 312-642-5600 is our Trinky Depro answer line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
I don't think we can even get to that question before we answer this one, which is, does Sarah Sanders belong in civil society? Is it acceptable for Sarah Sanders to be treated with respect in civil society because, you know, she's the White House press secretary? This was a topic I'm not kidding.
Are you kidding me?
This was a topic that was kicked around that intolerable program, Morning Joe, where you had Mika. She is half of the duet of Jika.
Joka?
You say Joka, I say Jika. NBC's Elise Jordan, who apparently is a reporter.
I've never heard of her.
This is interesting because, you know, I know reporters are these superhuman objective beings who have no opinions, but Elise Jordan does. She was asked if Sarah Sanders belongs in civil society, and it's not at all clear to her that she does.
And even that Sarah Sanders had over the weekend, which is a absolutely legitimate problem, but who cares?
But it goes back to the anger over... Plenty of Americans know that they are being lied to constantly, mm-hmm. and they want the truth. And should someone who lies constantly and enables the president's lies be openly welcomed in society wherever they please? Should they face any kind of social or societal pressure? I'm increasingly weighing towards yes, even though I'm all about civility. Yeah. But I do think that there are choices, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders has made her choices, and she has decided to constantly give false information from that podium to the American taxpayers who are paying her salary. Donald Trump has chosen to do that. Facts matter. The context that we present the facts matter. And this is not going away because we have thousands of children who have been separated from their parents, and we don't even know the full magnitude of it.
Yeah, I think you need to let those important words from Elise Jordan, she's so cute, wash over you. And really, you know, do a bit of soul searching before we welcome back Sarah Sanders into civil society unequivocally. You know, because she's a press flack for a politician, and she doesn't always give you the whole story. She's the first press secretary in history to do that.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We're talking about Red Hen Day 2, and of course, President tweeted about it, rallying to the defense of his press secretary.
The tweet was pretty funny. He ripped down the restaurant. It was awesome.
I don't know if he's gone there. I think he's perhaps making assumptions, The Red Hen restaurant should focus more on cleaning its filthy canopies, doors, and windows, badly needs a paint job. Rather than refusing to serve a fine person like Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I always had a rule. If a restaurant is dirty on the outside, it's dirty on the inside.
That's great.
You got a real nice briefing on Red Hen Restaurant, apparently, the president.
And he talked about it, too, last night when he was campaigning for today's primary in South Carolina.
They're only good at one thing. What's their term? Resist! It's the party of Maxine Waters. Do you believe her? No. No. This has become the party of Maxine Waters and Nancy Pelosi.
He was just talking about, you know, what their call to go up to politicians that you don't agree with and pretty much harass them in public.
Well, it's interesting. I think some Democrats are uncomfortable with Maxine Waters because I think they realize that this is not being received well, generally speaking, in the populace, that this isn't putting their best foot forward politically, and that they're continuing to gin up that Trump vote that came out in 2016 to make sure they make the same point they made in 16 in the midterms in 18. And so I think Maxine Waters is making a little, particularly, say, Democrat senators in red states, a little jumpy these days.
Yeah, and listen to her late night apology. I mean, I don't even know if this is an apology.
I believe in peaceful, very peaceful protests. I have not called for the harm of anybody. This president has lied again when he's saying that I called for harm to anyone.
Representative Waters, I have a follow-up. Representative Waters.
Hello.
What did you mean when you led the... rioting in L.A. after the Rodney King verdict and the chanting, no justice, no peace. What does that mean? No justice, no peace. Is that not an implicit call for violence? I mean, I just want to understand the meaning of your sloganeering. Now, no sleep, no peace. But it's sort of the same construct. I'm sure she just means it rhetorically because she's a measured woman. It also, the president may want to add, it's also the party of Judd Apatow. You know, Judd Apatow, of course.
Yes.
All of the silly movies. He's actually, yeah, he actually does have a nice credit with, what I'm forgetting, the Freaks and Geeks.
Oh.
Yeah, that was really good. But.
I had a brain fart. I'm sorry.
Gross.
Oh, gross. What, don't say that
phrase.
Word.
What are you, in fifth grade? That's terrible. Judd Apatow tweeted yesterday.
Brain freeze. Excuse me.
So Maxine Waters, Nancy Pelosi, and sort of the Hollywood dolts like Judd Apatow. He's a Nazi. He wants no judicial process. He kidnapped children and commits acts of violence for political gain and to support his racist views. He admires violent dictators. Trump is a Nazi. The debate is over. So we're not going to debate this. It's over. Judd Apatow said so. Soon we will have proof he is a Nazi supported by the Russians. Soon we have proof he is a Nazi supported by the Russians. I'm going to have to work the math out on that. But so there's Judd Apatow giving you the definitive word on this topic, on the topic of immigration, on the topic of the Trump administration, and thus the justification for Maxine Waters' call for targeting members of the Trump administration who are nothing more than Trump the Nazi's Gruppenführers. Don't you understand this?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. The Civil War is already upon us, guys. It's been upon us for a while. We'll talk about it when freedom returns at 5.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Why we're leaving the GOP? Between George Will's column over the weekend and this piece in the New York Times from Susan Bevan and Susan Coleman, with the Republican majority for choice, I've gotten some good belly laughs. Susan Bevan, Susan Coleman, writing the obituary for the Republican Party, that they say the year 1980 will be cited as the beginning of the end. Reaganism in full flower and the big tent was folding. These are pro-choice Republican women. Mm-hmm. They're shutting their doors. Gee, I wonder why. As Republicans, we spent four decades working inside the party to produce effective policies helping women and families. They supported great Republicans like, are you ready for this list?
Yeah.
Alan Simpson of Wyoming, Olympia Snow, Susan Collins of Maine, House members like Connie Morella of Maryland, Mike Castle of Delaware, Charlie Dent of Pennsylvania, governors like Bill Weld, you know, Bill Weld, the Libertarian VP candidate in 2016. Christine Todd Whitman, George Pataki. Argument was simple. True fiscal conservatives should embrace family planning because it reduces poverty, increases educational attainment, workforce competitiveness, improves health, provides the opportunity for people to make educated moral choices, so on and so forth. We don't have the space to outline President Trump's transgressions, but it's important to understand that his rise is an inevitable result of the hostility to women within the Republican culture. Women's reproductive freedom has shifted with the wind. That's no wonder women are voting with their feet. Pew Research Center, 56% of women identify as or lean towards Democrats. Mm-hmm. So they're gone. The Republican Party is no family of ours. And so we say goodbye. I wonder if they're closing their doors because of the lack of financial support to be relevant. How many people are familiar with the Republican majority for choice? I mean, I am, but I'm a political flack. I'm inside the tent or the bubble since I guess the tent folded. So the Republican Party is intolerant to people who are pro-choice, and so they're leaving.
Where are they going to go?
Don't care. And so
are they going to try and start a third party here?
So, the Gallup survey research on this issue. Remember, we talked about it. It came out earlier this month. 48% of Americans identify as pro-life, 48% pro-choice. So there's disagreement, But I guess Mrs. Bevin and Cullman can't tolerate the disagreement. Nearly every poll since 1979, women were slightly more likely than men to think abortion should be illegal in all circumstances. So I guess those aren't real women. Very much sounds like the left's characterization of women who are not radical left feminists and pro-abort flacks. You're not really a woman. But there's a lot of women who think they're women and are pro-life, turns out, much to the chagrin of Mrs. Bevin and Cullman. 60% of respondents think abortion should be generally legal during the first trimester. That support falls to 28% in the second trimester, 13% during the third trimester. So, you know, where the actual debates are occurring, because abortion is not going to be outlawed at the federal level unless and until the Supreme Court takes up the case again. If and when they do, overturning Roe v. Wade would just return it to the states. 28% support in the second trimester, 13% support in the third trimester. That's where all the action is legislatively. So actually, it's a supermajority of the country, much again to the chagrin of Bevin and Cullman, that oppose kind of abortion on demand. There are pro-choice Republicans. How many pro-choice Democrats are there? I mean, how many pro-life Democrats are there? Did you see what happened to Dan Lipinski in the recently passed Democrat primary for his congressional seat? Because he's
a pro-choice Democrat.
He's a pro-life Democrat.
Excuse me.
And he's like the last one standing.
Yeah.
Pro-life Democrat Lipinski is the last one standing, and the radical left threw everything and the kitchen sink at him, narrowly defeating his radical left opponent in the Democrat primary. So you want to talk to me about Big Tent? There's division on the issue. But in terms of diversity of opinion, the diversity of opinion on the issue is much more so within Republican ranks than it is Democrat ranks. You either hew the orthodoxy or you are targeted for elimination. Whereas, oh, by the way, for example, just to provide a local counter, in the super PAC that I run at the state level here, I've supported pro-choice Republican candidates for state legislative office with the resources that my PAC has. Supported candidates who disagree with me on marriage redefinition. I'm focused on the economic liberty policy agenda here. The interesting thing, too, is the real tell here is the candidates they supported. True fiscal conservatives. That's how the Republican majority for choice wanted to characterize themselves. Alan Simpson, Olympia Snowe, Susan Collins, Christine Todd Whitman, tax raiser, Bill Weld, George Pataki. These were fiscal conservatives in the Senate, in their respective state houses, governor's mansions. No, it turns out that most of those folks who are wrong on the fundamental issues become wrong on a range of other issues, too. It's one of the reasons that conservatives are so often first to ask a candidate for office, what's your position on abortion and what's your position on guns? Because if you're right on human life and if you're right on guns, self-protection, then it's likely you're going to be right on the range of other issues. And if you're not conservative in your understanding of those issues, then it's likely you're going to be off the rails on the fiscal issues, too. Let me give you an example. Former Governor Bruce Rauner. I mean,
well, he doesn't have a social agenda. Remember that?
Oh, right.
And he's not in charge, too.
Precisely. And let me give you an example. The candidates they listed as supporting, as I mentioned, Alan Simpson, Olympia Snowe, Susan Collins, Christine Todd Whitman, Bill Weld. It's just fascinating that they're taking a walk. They're so irrelevant that they have to pen this op-ed to formally provide a rationale for their slippage into oblivion. And that's because science is making it clear about human life and the development of human life. There's a good piece, by the way, in The Federalist by the executive director of the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists about when life begins and how science is making pro-life or pro-choicers look sort of silly on the issue. But point of fact is this is a divisive issue because the Supreme Court weighed in where it shouldn't have, penumbras and emanations and the like, and so it continues to be a divisive issue. But I just say again, in terms of your opening question, where are they going to go? Well, I guess they'll go to the other side that has no tolerance for diversity of opinion on the issue. Right? What is there a Democrats for Life movement on the left? I'm not familiar with it. And this is consistent, by the way, with that other op-ed I mentioned over the weekend. George Will, in November, cast your vote against the GOP. The principle is
that article yesterday.
Congressional Republican caucuses must be substantially reduced to minorities, stripped of the Constitution's Article 1 powers that they have been too invertebrate to use against the current wielder of Article 2 powers. Then they will have the leisure time to wonder why they work so hard to achieve membership in a legislature whose unexercised muscles have atrophied because of people like him. I mean, there's some legitimate criticism of Congress here, not from the angle that I would take. Falls on the side of the Bob Corkers and to a lesser extent the Jeff Flakes of the world, does George Will, who I think have already formally left the Republican Party, too, during the tenure of Trump. So now he's suggesting others do the same. It's interesting how Trump is fleshing people out. Stripping away a lot of facades. And you start to see people for who they really are when there is actual disagreement. And importantly, when they are not ascendant.
The pundit-ocracy. I mean, Jeff Flake's leaving, Trey Gowdy, Paul Ryan.
Well, they're not leaving the Republican Party. They're running again. That's different.
But don't you think we need Trey Gowdy and them in D.C.? Jeff Flake, maybe not, but of course Trey Gowdy.
I would be happy to have Trey Gowdy run for re-election. That would be great. He just chose not to do that. That's okay. There are temporary representatives, mm-hmm. not our betters. There are other people that can do those jobs. There are a lot of talented people in South Carolina, just like there are a lot of talented people in Illinois, almost none of whom are in public office. But could they do the jobs?
They're too tall, Dan. Lollipop gang. I mean, come on. Well, there's a height requirement.
I understand. Right. If you can go on the American Eagle, if you're taller than that succotash sham extended arm, then you can't be an office here. Do you think there's anybody in Chicago who could do Danny Davis's job?
Do
you think anybody in Chicago could do Mike Quigley's job?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Anybody in Chicago or Illinois who could do Tammy Duckworth's job or Dick Durbin's job? Yeah. There are a lot of people. They've just maybe not left the Republican Party. They've just sort of abdicated from politics altogether.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Mike Scott had it in his newscast. Two CPS principals, Chicago Public School principals, have been removed amid new allegations of sexual abuse. Hello?
Good.
Is this on? Wait. Is anybody paying attention to this?
312-642-5600 is our turnkey DepPro answer line.
We're 3 weeks removed from the betrayed expose the Chicago Tribune did, documenting systemic failure / covering up of sexual misconduct by CPS employees. But the adults in the system that do everything for the kids. Oh, I know. Or to the kids, as the case may be. 230 cases the city's lawyers found credible evidence of sexual misconduct. 230 cases. And this is just the first expose. This is the first cut at it. You know what's happening now. You have two girls testify before a legislative committee last week. And so more are kind of coming forward because they feel they can now, which is a good thing. Remember what this we're talking about here. We're talking about sexual abuse of children. We're talking about people who should have never been employed by CPS because a proper background check would have found arrests and convictions associated with sex offenses against children in some cases. We're talking about the principals and administrators with a legal duty to report to DCFS and local police any such incident who didn't. We're talking about people getting shuffled around, reassigned.
Oh, and also people that moved to other states because they knew that they were busted or going to get busted, and they became, one became a superintendent at a school in Florida or a school district there.
Sheldon House, the principal of Simeon Career Academy, removed amid a newly disclosed allegation of sexual abuse lodged against an unnamed school volunteer.
That's the track coach.
The allegation was discovered during an audit of systemic issues.
Oh, yeah.
Quote, unquote, in the school's background check process. Oh, really?
Well, the findings suggest that they did not effectively safeguard their students. He and Armando Rodriguez of am I pronouncing
this correctly? Goodstem.
Sarah Goodstem Academy.
But Armando Rodriguez, the principal at Sarah Goodstem, reassigned from his post. Oh, the little dance of the lemons. Reassigned from his post after a teacher at the building was removed from duty earlier this month following an allegation of sexual abuse of a student.
Oh. Huh.
So, by the way...
Is there justice there?
Is there any assignment of responsibility to the head of the Chicago Public Schools? I'm not talking about Janice Jackson, Miss Jackson, if you're nasty. I'm talking about Tiny Dancer. Any assignment of responsibility there? Or are we going to be satisfied with his, hey, I'm sorry, every adult should be sorry. Hey, if you got any ideas, I'm all ears.
Don't pin routine. This on one person. Remember when he said that?
Oh, no, right. No, this is everybody. All of us are responsible. We're equal. The people in charge of the system are no more responsible than you out there who have nothing to do with CPS. That's essentially the line of argumentation Rahm offered. And, you know, now they're going to try and gather a few scalps to show how serious they are about rooting out the systemic sexual abuse inside the Chicago public school system.
Oh, at Simeon High School, though, you mentioned it's a new allegation. This is something new. Of a volunteer, and it was not handled according with CPS policy. That's why their principal's gone. Both of these people are being replaced by retired CPS principals.
Mm-hmm. The Tribune story, remember, documented Simeon's failure to conduct a mandated criminal background check before making Gerald Gaddy an assistant coach of the boys' wrestling and girls' track team starting in 2010. The Tribune investigation documented just kind of general shortfalls in district practices to avoid and respond to sexual misconduct.
And grooming too. I mean, there's a lot of these teachers who would just try and, well, you know what grooming means, but they're going to put a stop to that. Because they put out an email, and that's going to make it all better, that they're going to investigate even allegations of that. And they're going to put posters up in the hallways, Dan, that say, you know, report sexual abuse, even if it's from your teacher.
Uh-huh.
Question authority.
Kevin in Northfield, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Dan, my comment is short and sweet. When it comes to child sexual abuse, at the Chicago public school system, it's the principal that matters.
Okay. Is that sort of some kind of sort of double entendre? Thanks for the call, Kevin. I'm sort of flabbergasted by how this is getting coverage, but it's not really leading the news. No, it doesn't feel like this has permeated the body politic that people are talking about this.
Oh, Channel 7 did a reader on it last night. Ooh.
But I mean, you're in a CPS community. Are people talking about this? Families at Blaine talking about this?
Oh, God, no.
Why not?
Well, me and my other fellow Republican, because there's two of us there, we talked about it.
Yeah, but you have liberal friends there, too.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. Maybe it's the timing that this all came out right before summer break. But it's frightening.
Oh,
and I've been assured by our principal and our assistant principal that, you know, any allegation that is reported is taken seriously and that they care for our children.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, Gerald Gaddy, who, again, was profiled in the Tribune, the failure of the background check at Simeon. I mean, he was, this is 4 or 5 years ago. This is somebody who was convicted of assaulting girls. And you had one of the girls testify before that legislative commission last week.
Here she is.
I'm here because of what CPS subjected me to in the months following. I'm here to shed light on the re-traumatizing, intimidating interrogations.
And wait till you hear this. They blame the victim.
I was pulled from class to sit alone in a room with an old man who asked not how I felt or what they could do to make me feel safe in my own school again, but what I was wearing when I had been assaulted.
I mean, honestly, that makes me want to cry. That she was raped, and then they asked her what she was wearing as if it's her fault. Sick.
I felt like I was the one under investigation.
I am not the person I was before the assault. And I will never be the same as a result of what has been done to me.
I am so glad this morning that the principal has been fired. From Simeon.
I just don't know. We're sort of so slow to react to these abuses. I don't really understand what the loyalty is to CPS. I've seen polling on CPS. It is not held in high regard by Chicago residents. Interestingly, you wouldn't believe this to see the press coverage of institutions in Chicago, but the Chicago police are held in much higher regard than the Chicago public school system. I think you have a little bit of a problem like you do in Congress, where I despise Congress, but I like my congressman. I don't like CPS. I don't think the schools do a good job. I think they're getting worse. That's actually prevailing public opinion in Chicago of CPS. And it's also correct. So it should be prevailing public opinion. But I like my teacher. I like my school.
Well, yeah,
so
I love Blaine. Well, I mean, I love the kids there, and I love the teachers. I love the janitors. I love the lunchroom.
We were slow to react and hold people accountable. And obviously there was massive system failure in the Catholic Church when it came to sexual abuse. The same thing at Michigan State with that gymnast doctor. And now this, are we inert to it? Do we shrug our shoulders? We say we can't do anything about it. Are we afraid to go after CPS for some reason? I don't know what that reason could possibly be. It's a terrible, terrible public school system.
Awful. I mean,
Rahm.
Well, why aren't people going after Rahm? Why aren't there protests in front of his house? I mean, there's always people getting off the brown line and marching up his street, but nobody's marching and protesting for this.
Have we so resigned ourselves to this kleptocracy that we just throw up our hands and go about our daily lives and just say, well, these institutions have failed forever. They will continue to fail. There's nothing I can do about it, so I give up. And, you know, and Rahm is the best we can do. This alderman's the best we can do. I mean, is that where it's at? It's just the fatalism is so thick and the Stockholm syndrome so virulent that you just can't get motivated to rise up against your occupiers? It's bizarre to me. It's like, I don't care about my home being taken away. I don't care about some alderman taking somebody's property away because he's on the wrong side of some political dispute, getting fired. I don't care about children being abused in CPS. I mean, nothing can animate me. It's remarkable, the indifference or fatalism. I guess they're sort of two sides of the same coin. Interestingly, a related story. A good piece from former Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal.
Oh, I love him.
In the Wall Street Journal, The Moral Logic of School Choice.
Oh,
And this is related because we have this tax credit scholarship program that was initiated last year, $500 million over 5 years, 75% tax credit up to like $1.3 million for donors, both individual and corporate, to fund scholarships. And you can designate to specific schools or just fund regionally. And this is life preservers for kids in this terrible school system and other terrible school systems around the state. But families who would make a choice if they had the resources to implement the choice, well, those resources are coming online. And against the backdrop of this predatory environment in CPS, the systemic failure in CPS, it couldn't be more important. Joe on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
So I want to know where, answer your question, where's the press, where's the outrage, where's the thing? I said, it'll come when the lawyers come. And, you know, there's, I want to know where the evil cabal of lawyers are. They're going to jump on the carcass of the CPS school system.
Yeah, where are the trial lawyers here? Thanks for the call, Joe. Where are the trial lawyers? Now this is going after an institution that, you know, trial lawyers as financiers of the left, you know, would otherwise be quick to defend. But I understand that their priority is going to be business related. It's not an easy target that the press will cheer like the Catholic Church. It would be interesting. But it's been very quiet from all of the customary fronts, hasn't it been?
Well, maybe now that two principals have been removed, it might move into the A block of the newscast?
No.
From the B?
I don't. Do you think so? I don't. I don't know.
Fatalism breeds fatalism. The victim that was so brave to testify in Springfield last week, I didn't see her.
Yeah, last week.
I didn't see her on 5 or 2. Well, we don't watch 2.
I mean, they,
or 32 the, or 7.
I'm sure it's covered in passing, but the point is that it just doesn't seem like it's front and center like it should be. Like you would think a scandal of this magnitude and the nature of it would be. That's bizarre to me. Bobby Jindal's piece about school choice. Empower Illinois is like the leading scholarship granting organization in the state. That's where you can apply for scholarships to various schools. So if you're thinking about that for your kids, and you should be, particularly if you're in a terrible school system like CPS. Jindal makes an important point. The moral logic of school choice. The moral logic of school choice is simple. It empowers parents to select the environment that fits each student's particular aptitudes, learning styles, and preferences. Since parents know their kids better than any government bureaucracy, they're best positioned to make such decisions. And he distinguishes between like the Chamber of Commerce types and conservatives. And this is an important distinction. The Chamber of Commerce types prioritize economic growth and skilled workers, so they're comfortable with a top-down approach. They may embrace universal standard tests, Common Core, evidence-based learning scam that we just embraced. Republicans and Democrats embraced in the budget last year.
Common Core?
Common Core, but I'm talking about evidence-based.
Right. Bobby Jindal and I bonded over Common Core because our sons were both in fifth grade at the time. And we're like, hey, can you explain to me what 9 plus 6 equals and why? I mean, it was the infuriating math. That was the worst program ever. But go on, sorry.
Well, his point about the Chamber of Commerce types, the people that think it's okay to stop at charter schools and then it's okay to unionize the charter schools to undermine the point of charter schools in the first place. You know, the kind of effete C-suite class in Chicago that spends most of its time pretending to be fiscal conservatives while supporting Chicago Democrats, that type. This is an important type because they're a bulwark against progress, generally speaking. Chamber of Commerce types prioritize economic growth and skilled workers. That's why they like a top-down approach. And then if the test scores don't improve quickly enough or if dropout rates don't plummet, they won't object to closing the charter school, ending the scholarship funding, trying another reform. This was the thinking behind previous experiments with smaller class sizes, more tech, new facilities. Conservatives, on the other hand, distinguished from the Chamber of Commerce types, favor a bottom-up approach. For them, economic growth is not the fundamental reason for universal public education. Otherwise, employers could simply replace state schools by sponsoring vocational training centers. Rather, conservatives see schools as an essential element of a self-governing republic, since citizens must have the critical thinking skills to hire and fire their leaders, something that's obviously lacking in this city. In this view, choice is the ultimate form of accountability, and letting parents pick their children's schools is valuable in itself, irrespective of outcomes. Parents' decisions must therefore be respected even when they are unconventional, such as homeschooling. Precisely. The choice is a good in and of itself. And the bigger question, which Jindal asks, is to those who support choice for some and not for others, is distinguish who is, which adults are capable of choosing for their children and which do you say are not. This is the whole argument that has not been put to the central planners in the school systems. Force them to expose themselves for the hypocrites, racists in some cases, that they are. Certainly socioeconomic bigots. If you're poor, you don't have the intellect to make a choice. That's what they believe. That's the the whole kind of, you know, rally around public education and our great schools, our great neighborhood schools and this and that. What they really believe, and they want you to believe, is that poor people don't have the intellect to make choices for their kids. Thus, they need to be led by Tiny Dancer and the other members of the Lollipop Gang, and thus become beholden to them. Opportunity scholarships provide just exactly what they say. Opportunity, independence. You're not beholden to anybody anymore. You're charting your own course for your kid. Why does the state respect that some parents are capable of choosing what is best for children while acting as though other parents aren't, is the question, is the way that Jindal puts the question. And it's exactly the question that more people should be asking in Chicago, in Illinois, in addition to all of the questions you should be asking at your local school level, as well as at the administrative office, as well as at the city's fifth floor, City Hall fifth floor, about what has been happening in CPS with respect to exploitation of children.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy are talking about the CPS sex abuse scandal, and why it doesn't seem to be penetrating the city's consciousness. Brian on Route 59, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Amy. Love your show.
Thank you.
First-time caller. So right. I think it's just because, you know, the CPS is wholly aligned with the Democrats and the left, and we've proven time and time again that they get special treatment from the press. It's we have a slanted, biased, you know, media in this country. Why? You had the immigration guy on the other day talking about the immigration issues under Obama and how many people have been deported under him. Why did that never make the news?
Yeah.
I think Trump makes a mistake when he calls it fake news. He should call it what it is. It's slanted, biased news all the time.
Thanks for the call, Brian. Appreciate it. Call again. I think there's something to that. Certainly covering for those in power. I mean, the D.C. press corps, just like the Chicago press corps, is the big government press corps. They're handmaidens, with exceptions, to big government purveyors. Now, again, credit to the Chicago Tribune for doing this expose. Mm-hmm. But then you have to go up the food chain and start to beat the drum for accountability at the highest levels. Why don't we start at the top? Let's start at the top in terms of accountability. I mean, this also is the same guy who put Barbara Bird Bennett in as CPS chief. And now she, of course, is in federal prison.
Yeah, I mean, robbing taxpayers.
I mean, is there any accountability at the executive level in this city and state? That's my question.
Tiny Dancer, I know, and Tiny Dancer came out and said it's not just one person. It's not just...
No.
Like, it's all of our fault. I've never been in Simeon High School in my life, but it's my fault.
You are as much at fault as Rahm Emanuel. We all are at fault. Mm-hmm. Everyone is to blame, including him, but including everybody. again, executive accountability in the state. Will we ever get it?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. How would you react to being targeted in public by the shame mob? You're wearing a MAGA hat. You're having a private conversation about Trump. You're not a Trump administration official, but, you know, once they start with cabinet members, I'm sure they'll work their way down the line. Everybody wants to get on in this act. And they're being encouraged by Democrat leaders.
I mean,
shockingly, you have to call Maxine Waters, No Justice, No Peace, Maxine, a leader, encouraged to target Trump officials in public.
And she's giving specifics of where they should be tracked down and made to feel uncomfortable.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them.
Like mob-like behavior. Mob.
Well, that's what it is, the shame mob. So, well, how would you react? 312-446-6... That's my cell number. You can call my cell number. I'll put you on speaker. Or you can just call the landline, 312-642-5600, turkey.pro, answer line, 646-36-DA, turkey.pro, text line. I have too many numbers running around.
So then Maxine Waters, under pressure by Nancy Pelosi and by Chuck Schumer, who said that, you know, harassment is not American, she tried to walk it back and kind of apologize.
I believe in peaceful, very peaceful protests. I have not called for the harm of anybody. This president has lied again when he's saying that I called for harm to anyone.
Hmm. Well, I mean, no justice, no peace, no peace, no sleep. Yeah, okay, fine. She's just calling for the shame mob to target you. That's fine. I'll concede her point.
How is this going to end? Honestly, what's the end game here? Because everyone say, you know, on CNN, civility starts with the president, and the president is the one who started this because of his tweets, because of his rhetoric on the campaign trail.
Yeah,
no, this is different. This is a new tactic that I've never seen before of shaming and screaming and holding up signs while somebody's having a meal in an upscale restaurant in D.C. That's Kristen Nielsen.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Are you not familiar with the work of Code Pink?
Oh.
What? You're not familiar with the work of ACT UP. I mean, we have such short memories. The shame mob has been around for a long time. Is it being ratcheted up, perhaps?
Have they ever targeted press secretaries before?
I mean, they called George W. Bush a Nazi, too.
Right, but did they stand there with a sign while he was trying to eat dinner or lunch?
Cindy Richards sat outside his ranch in Crawford, Texas.
Oh, for 3 weeks?
I mean, I understand the circumstances are a bit different, but the idea of the left attacking those in power who are not fellow travelers and trying to undermine that at every score, trying to go after people's businesses, boycotts and the like, the protests, the shame mobbing. This is not new. I think it's just being ratcheted up.
Well, Sarah Huckabee Sanders responded yesterday to being asked to leave the Red Hen restaurant in Lexington, Virginia.
Many by now have heard that I was asked to leave a restaurant this weekend where I attempted to have dinner with my family. My husband and I politely left and went home. I was asked to leave because I work for President Trump. We are allowed to disagree, but we should be able to do so freely and without fear of harm. And this goes for all people, regardless of politics. Some have chosen to push hate and vandalism against the restaurant that I was asked to leave from. A Hollywood actor publicly encouraged people to kidnap my children. And this weekend, a member of Congress called for people to push back and make clear to those serving their country and this administration that they are not welcome anywhere, anytime, for anything. Healthy debate on ideas and political philosophy is important. But the calls for harassment and push for any Trump supporter to avoid the public is unacceptable. America is a great country, and our ability to find solutions despite those disagreements is what makes us unique.
Now, we wanted to give you a bit of insight into what it was like to be in the Red Hen.
Oh, on that night.
So you know. So we did, like, remember the old Folgers commercial?
Oh, yes.
We secretly put a camera in Red Hen, remember?
World famous Arno's restaurant. We secretly replaced the fine coffee they normally serve with Folgers crystals. Are dark, sparkling Folgers crystals rich enough to top off a fabulous meal? Watch.
Do you have more?
Do you have more, sir?
We also replaced their coffee with Folgers crystals, in addition to putting a camera inside there. So here's how it would be to be in the Red Hen. There's an actual couple interacting with the wait staff at the Red Hen.
Hey guys.
Hello.
Hi, hello.
My name is Dana. I'll be taking care of you today. If you have any questions about the menu, please let me know.
I guess I do have a question about the chicken, if you could just tell us a little bit more about it.
The chicken is a heritage breed, woodland-raised chicken that's been fed a diet of sheep's milk, soy, and hazelnuts.
Okay, this is local?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to ask you just one more time, and it's local.
It is.
Is that USDA organic or Oregon organic or Portland organic?
It's just all across the board, organic.
The hazelnuts, these are local?
How big is the area where the chickens are able to roam free?
I'm sorry to interrupt. I have exactly the same question.
4 acres. Mm-hmm. Give me just a second. I'll be right back, okay?
Okay.
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 We're doing the right thing.
I'm too apologetic.
You are.
I drove way too slow here today, didn't I?
Yeah.
I'm so weird with that gas pedal. I think just moves the whole vehicle forward.
All right, so here is the chicken you'll be enjoying tonight.
You have this information. This is fantastic.
Absolutely. His name was Colin. Here are his papers, okay?
That's great. He looks like a happy little guy who runs around. A lot of friends, other chickens as friends. Putting his little wing around another one and kind of like palling around.
I don't know that I can speak to that level of intimate knowledge about him. They do a lot to make sure that their chickens are very happy.
When you say they, I mean, who are these people raising Colin?
It's a farm that's located about 30 miles south of Portland.
And you have a good relationship with this farm?
We do.
But it's not some guy on a yacht who lives in Miami.
Oh, goodness, no.
Saying that he's organic.
It tears at the core of my being the idea of someone just cashing in on a trend like organic.
No, I know the type, no.
Yeah.
Tell you what, we're going to go check it out if you don't mind. Just if you could hold our seats.
Oh, No.
Yeah. We'll be right back. We'll make sure.
Thank you so much, Dana.
Sure.
So that's sort of the farm to table experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just so you know, if you haven't had that experience.
Portlandia? That's great. That is classic. I've never had the farm to table experience.
Or have you ever gone to a farm to visit your dinner before you have it?
I saw one on the way to Purdue last week.
That's not quite the same.
But I should stop by and kill the chicken that you eat, right?
So what are you going to do if the shame out comes for you or if you had to go to a farm-to-table restaurant? The reactions could be similar. Jay in Lowell, Indiana, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, 2 points. I bet if Sarah Huckabee Sanders was black, we'd be hearing about this every day. And the second point, if they get here to what I say to do, the first one needs you popping them off and knock on their rear end, they'll stop.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Jay. That would end it. Chris in Kansasville.
Yeah, we've all, in Wisconsin, we've gone through this already with Walker and Act 10.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Our legislators had people spit in their faces, poop in the Capitol. I mean, you know, this is the same thing, just ramped up even a little more.
Thanks for the call,
but did they
Chris.
Take it and throw it afterwards like they did at that Thornton's? At
Tim Hortons. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Canadians. Bob in Waukegan.
Yeah, Maxine Waters is a total dolt. The last place that you want to get a crowd and start harassing someone is when they're pumping gas. Because if they have a lighter in their pocket, they're going to light your ass up like a Buddhist monk.
Okay, thanks for the call, Bob. We have to go to Firestarter there. Ed in Oakbrook.
You know what? I'm not shocked by Maxine Walters because I think she's probably the most stupidest person in Congress, maybe the galaxy. But what I am shocked is by, I just was flipping channels, the commentators like MSNBC and CNN, how they're actually laughing this off and think it's absolutely outstanding. And I think this is going to hurt the Democrats in November because you got to be disgusted by this. I don't care what party you're with or who you are. If you're sitting on the fence, you're going to say, you know what, this is totally out of control.
All right. Thanks for the call, Ed. Dennis in Crystal Lake.
Well, Dan, I officially got my MAGA paraphernalia. I know Amy's there, but she turned on my proposal for marriage, so I'm not talking to her now.
Well, that happens a lot. She turns down a lot of people.
I'll go to prom with you.
Dennis, it's not just you.
Yeah. Don't worry about it, Amy. You don't have to, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. But anyways.
Please, yes.
I got my paraphernalia MAGA on, and I am going off my medication right now. And anybody that even says boo to me by tomorrow will get their heart ripped out from.
Wow, okay.
Any of you touch my stuff, Dennis will kill you.
Don't take his bar stool.
Okay, take it easy. Okay.
What would you? I'm always looking over my shoulder.
For what?
People. People.
They're out to get you.
Who want to harass me?
Yeah.
Where's the phone call coming from? Inside the house.
That doesn't happen. You don't get harassed.
I get the stink eye. I got the stink eye last night from my liberal. See, there's two conservatives on our street, and the two of us mow everyone's lawn. He does the east side. I do the west side. We clean the drain after it rains so that the flooding doesn't occur in the street.
Yeah.
My neighbor, Mike. And we're getting tired of cleaning everyone's lawns.
Well, wait, who gave you the stink eye?
The neighbor across the street, who shall remain nameless. But he gave me the stink eye. He came up. He's like, I don't understand what's going on. And I didn't want to get into a political conversation with him.
So. It's a guy?
Yeah.
Why don't you do what Jay from Lowland, Indiana said and go up and pop him in the mouth? Knock him on his ass. That'll teach him. Teach him some manners.
I don't want to do that. Yeah. I just want him to clean his lawn, pull the weeds, paint the front porch.
It seems fair.
Bring in property values down.
I want to just take this quick walk down to Memories Pizza Lane. Uh-huh. Remember Memories Pizza? It wasn't so long ago. It was 3 years. Memories Pizza in Indiana? Remember?
No, because I have a horrible memory.
They got...
tell me and I'll remember.
This is during the issue with all of, like, the Supreme Court yesterday vacated the decision in the Stutzman case for...
Flowers.
Yeah, the florist for, you know, being forced to cater a gay wedding, just as the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. And that's why they vacated the Stutzman case, is because of their holding in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. Well, Memories Pizza was in this when this was all bubbling to the surface, florists and photographers and bakers and so forth. A reporter called the O'Connor family, who owned Memories Pizza, and just asked what their position was on the issue. And they just said, well, we wouldn't host a gay wedding, because that's
Remember?
They had never denied anybody service. It was a hypothetical question that was posed to them, and they just gave their position, which is, you know, because of their Christian beliefs, they wouldn't cater a gay wedding. And then the left descended upon them so much so that they shut down the restaurant. Memories Pizza closed. Now there's a GoFundMe page that raised like north of $800,000, maybe more. I don't remember, but I know it cleared that threshold. But the media totally misrepresented the position of the owners of Memories Pizza, and then the shame mob descended upon them from all quarters. I mean, the left is so good at flooding the zone immediately, and they just descend upon Memories Pizza, destroy a business, and that's to be applauded. But the same people are suggesting people writing negative Yelp reviews and so forth against Red Hen. Well, that's beyond the pale. Well, I mean, again, you know, memories like the corners of my mind. Tony in Olympia Fields.
Hey, how you doing, Dan and Amy?
Good.
Listen to your show a lot. Really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Dan, Maxine Waters does not represent African-Americans or blacks like me and Elijah Cummings. They do not represent us. They speak, but they're not, they've never really accomplished anything. You know, they sit high on the hill, and then they verbalize everything as racist or something that's convoluted that has nothing to do with what's going on in our country, in our nation, and in our community. Those people do not represent us. They do not speak for us. And I wish, whites would quit looking at them as some type of spokesman for the majority of black people. Most of us loathe those people. We can't stand those people. They're ignorant, irrelevant, and way outdated.
All right. Thanks for the call, Tony. I appreciate it. I mean, I agree. I use her as a representative of the Democrat Party, not of black families and their views. But, you know, she's been elevated by the Democrat Party. But, no, I appreciate your perspective, Tony. Danny in Mount Prospect.
Hi, Dan. I'm so enjoying what Maxine is doing, and I love you kiddos. My day isn't complete if I miss you guys at all.
Thank you.
I was thinking about the Democratic Party platform with gun control. Do you think that what Maxine is doing is going to generate people buying more guns for protection, both the left and the right, for their own protection? You think maybe Maxine might be destroying her party's platform? What do you think?
Thanks for the call, Dan. Well, I mean, I think she's certainly hurting the party politically, and I think there's some Democrats who recognize that, which is why she sort of tried to walk some of what she said back in, and others sort of tried to walk it back in for her. I think at minimum it's politically damaging. In terms of guns and the coming civil war, well, I think the left is going to be outmanned on that score, too.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I remarked upon this yesterday, this story that broke on Friday from Judicial Watch. Now, this, remember, was the shadow Department of Justice for the Obama administration's 8 years and may need to continue to be. Through FOIA, Judicial Watch released emails they obtained from the IRS, including in those emails, John McCain's former staff director and chief counsel on the Senate Homeland Security Permanent Subcommittee, his name is Henry Koerner, was a collaborator with Lois Lerner, Koerner and Lerner.
Sounds like a law firm.
Or a CNN show. It probably will become
actually
a CNN show.
Don't give them any ideas.
Koerner was part of the cabal there at IRS to illegally target conservative groups seeking nonprofit status for their religious and or political beliefs. In an April 30th, 2013 meeting between Koerner, Lerner, and other IRS officials, Koerner tells Lerner, Steve Miller, then chief of staff to IRS commissioner, maybe the solution is to audit so many that it is financially ruinous. In response, Lerner said, it's her job to oversee it all, the financially ruinous auditing of conservative groups to prevent them from obtaining nonprofit status for which they're otherwise entitled on the merits. And remember, Lois Lerner pleaded the fifth. John Koskinen just finally replaced as IRS commissioner by Trump a couple of months ago.
That took way too long.
Should have been day one. And nobody...
Why did it take so long?
Nobody has been held to account in any material way.
No one's been charged criminally.
The illegal targeting of Americans in violation of the First Amendment for their religious and political beliefs by the most weaponized federal agency that isn't a part of the military. I mean, it doesn't get more substantial than that. And so this week we have complete attention on arguing against law enforcement for people coming to this country illegally, while we're ignoring law enforcement on behalf of American citizens who were illegally targeted by the federal government. You got that? Could things be more upside down? For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined again by Tom Fitton, who is the president of Judicial Watch and has also served as a shadow attorney general per my shadow Justice Department reference. Tom Fitton, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, thank you for staying on this case of, and Judicial Watch for staying on this case of this IRS scandal, which is just so woefully underreported. It's hard for me to properly describe it, I suppose. But what else do we know about Henry Koerner and his involvement with this illegal activity that was going on at IRS?
Well, you know, it was a meeting with, they were the minority staff, the Republicans at the time, and you would have thought, based on contacts they gave to us, you know, they communicated with us after we first reported on the meeting, because we knew there was a meeting that took place. We reported on it 3 years ago, and the pushback from McCain's office was, you know, we're the minority staff. We're just there along for the ride. You know, this was all run by the Democrats. And then we get 11 pages of meeting notes that show the minority staff member, Mr. Koerner, is as heavily involved as the Democrat, all pushing the IRS to audit and target these 501c4 groups, political advocacy groups, which they don't mention Tea Party in the notes, but everyone knew at the time they were talking about Republican and conservative-oriented groups, and that's exactly what was going on in the IRS. They were suppressing them, and then they had this idea that Koerner presented, well, why don't you just audit them? In a financially ruinous manner, because McCain and his ilk did not like the idea of these free groups out there after the McCain-Feingold measure was overturned in large measure by the Supreme Court and Citizens United. You remember President Obama yelled about it, and McCain hated the decision as well, so they were using the IRS to suppress political speech in response because the law was overturned. Really outrageous stuff, and it just shows you the investigation, the targeting is a bipartisan nature.
So you think, obviously, Senator John McCain knew about Koerner's actions, and did he encourage him to do what he did? I mean, did he get a direct order, you think, from John McCain?
Oh, I don't know. But, you know, he's a top staff member, so he's responsible for what he did. And, you know, the irony is Koerner is now President Trump's appointee in office of special counsel, which is one of the lead ethics agencies for the executive branch. So now he's a presidential appointee. But Mr. McCain has to take ownership here. And his response is, well, we didn't tell him to target the Tea Party, but he told him to target every group in America that was engaged in political advocacy at the time, and which meant, as you know, from the IRS's perspective, was go after the conservatives.
And you make the note that McCain just issued a statement after that 2013 meeting that Judicial Watch reported on, that the reports claiming his office was involved is just false. It just gives like the blanket denial, but he doesn't address the specifics, which is usually a tell.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that was the response again this year after this release, that that story's already been debunked. I've been debunked. I love it when they use the word debunked. Usually it's the exact opposite. He wasn't involved in Tea Party targeting and criticized it, which is true. The fact is his top person was encouraging Lois Lerner to engage in illegal activity.
And where is Lois Lerner these days, enjoying her retirement?
And her pension?
I don't know. I would presume so.
You make the note in here that, and obviously per this revelation on Friday, that you're not done with the IRS scandal, even if the political class and the D.C. press corps is. So what's next in trying to get some reckoning for people who were who had their First Amendment rights violated by the federal government?
Well, separately, some lawsuits have been settled, but more documents are coming out. We have other documents we're reviewing. We don't know exactly what the documents are going to show, but this Justice Department, the Sessions Justice Department, went back and we looked at the IRS scandal last year, decided they weren't going to prosecute, which was outrageous.
Right.
And maybe the release of more information will give them second thoughts and lead to the public pressure for some criminal accountability for what went on.
On another matter, I note since she is the person of the day, Maxine Waters, you have filed, Judicial Watch has filed an ethics complaint against Maxine Waters. Can you describe the nature of that complaint?
Well, it's simple. The number one rule in the House Ethics Manual, the House Ethics Rules, is that you can't act in a way that brings discredit upon the House. And it seems to me when you're encouraging intimidation, violence, and assault, that tends to bring discredit on the House. So we filed an ethics complaint.
Oh, did you?
So it's up.
Oh, sorry. Did you hear her non-apology last night?
Oh, yeah, I see. She doubled down. But, you know, that's Maxine Waters. And she's going to say what she's going to say. The question is the House going to endorse that language by allowing her to go by unpunished for what she said? It's a dangerous, dangerous situation we're in when you have a national political figure like Maxine Waters. And, you know, people on our side who disagree with her, you know, think she's a joke or not. She's no joke. She's not stupid. She has a significant political following. Mm-hmm. And she's out there advocating violence, assault, and harassment of federal government officials.
Although the
she doesn't say it's violent. And now, to be clear, she didn't say it's violence and assault. But when you say get a crowd together and push back in a private establishment like a gas station or a restaurant, that's the very definition of you're calling for a riot, essentially.
Right. Which she has a lot of experience, property. And she has a lot of experience in participating in riots. So there's a record there. But now the standard of bringing disgrace upon the House, I mean, you would clean out most of Congress by that standard, which may be a good thing.
Well, you know, admittedly, it's a low standard, and there's a but she even falls beneath that in terms of this type of behavior.
Just because this is what you guys do, I just wanted to get your reaction to another story that got subordinated to all the immigration stuff last week. And this was a week ago Friday. Devin Nunes, Trey Gowdy, Speaker Ryan, meet with Christopher Wray, Rod Rosenstein, say, produce the documents that we have subpoenaed, or there's going to be hell to pay how much ever hell we can bring through the House, sort of Nunes implying perhaps they'd move to impeach Rosenstein, for example. Well, that the week came and went, and nothing happened, as is often the case. And then the Justice Department, Washington Examiner reporting, responded to Nunes, and his latest deadline of last week, Friday, just telling him that Justice had already produced the documents and answers he had been inquiring about. Well, then why did they have the meeting a week ago Friday if they've already gotten everything that they wanted? So just because this is your business and you guys are better at it than anybody, how do you interpret and assess this dance going on between the House Republican Caucus and the names I mentioned, and Justice?
It will go on until the end of the Trump presidency and beyond it, unless the president directly intervenes. Justice Department and the FBI are not going to voluntarily give up these documents, which are the Spygate documents, essentially. Mm-hmm. What was behind the spying on Donald Trump? And I'm convinced they're not going to do it because Robert Mueller is the inheritor of that investigation, and it will further undermine and destroy his investigation. So you got the deep state protecting it. They're not going to do it voluntarily, and they're going to play a shell game, do the modified limited hangout approach. We may get some more information, but we're not going to get all the information necessary to make decisions in the American people to hold these government officials to account what went on during the Obama administration and continued during the Trump administration by the deep state in terms of the spying and targeting President Trump. The president needs to step in.
All right. He is Tom Fitton, the president of Judicial Watch, judicialwatch.org. Their motto, because no one is above the law, and they act in furtherance of that principle. Tom, thanks so much for joining us again. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you, guys.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, remember this instant classic from last week, President Trump walking through the rotunda at the Capitol building, and this was yelled in his direction. Mr. President.
F.
Correct.
You.
The.
She's an intern, right?
Yeah, the delicate flower has been identified. Caitlin Marriott. She's a 21-year-old intern in the office of Democrat New Hampshire Senator Maggie Hassan. And she, I believe, is a Keene State College undergrad. She has been suspended. Her congressional intern ID badge revoked.
But she
is not losing her internship, thank goodness.
Wow.
Thank goodness. I wonder where she learned such manners.
Well, are you ready for this? Fox News was told that her comment was, quote unquote, impulsive, and that the interns had been joking about yelling to Trump. And she was reportedly egged on by other interns to shout the obscenity.
Mm-hmm.
So plausible deniability. I mean, just She made a mistake that's not the decorum that you follow?
The college campus. I wonder if that's the culprit here. Or maybe the left, the civility police on the left. I wonder if that's the culprit. But the important thing is, like all of the politicians in her current work environment, she is not being held accountable. So that's the important thing. She keeps the internship.
Yeah, until August.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity, right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So the campaign has been joined. Campaign for Illinois Governor, State Senator Sam McCann from Macoupin County. His district runs from Macoupin County along the border to central Illinois, just to Sangamon County. He was a supporter of organized labor. Supported legislation advanced by the public sector unions that put him at odds with the Republican caucus and Governor Rauner. And now, rather than run for re-election as state senator, as we talked to him several weeks back, he has chosen to run as an independent candidate for governor under the Conservative Party banner. He turned in roughly 65,000 petition signatures to the State Board of Elections in Springfield yesterday. That's 40,000 more than a third-party candidate needs. So it's a significant amount of signatures he got in a relatively short period of time.
Shows there's an appetite out there for another candidate.
Well, I'll tell you, I've seen some polling in northwest suburban Cook County, for example,
mm-hmm.
where I would hazard to say they don't know who Sam McCann is yet. But he was getting 13% of the vote, according to this poll, just by not being Pritzker or Rauner. So could be interesting, particularly if he has resources to run a campaign, not at the level of billionaires, but at the level of generating the kind of awareness where people understand who he is and what choice he presents. For more on that very topic, we're pleased to be joined by State Senator Sam McCann. Sam, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Good morning, Dan and Amy. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So you filed yesterday, so you're off to the races, and you're running for governor. Why?
Well, first of all, I feel called to do so. I think that we're to the point in Illinois that it's either fight or leave, right? What we have, if we get four more years of what we have had, which is failure, that why stick around? If we get four more years of total Democratic control like we had for nearly 20 years before, total Chicago machine dominance, why stick around? So the only option left is to fight. And I do believe that it's worth fighting for. I believe that Illinois is an amazing state. We have far more going for us than we hear about on a daily basis. We just have we've been devoid of any real leadership in Springfield for a couple of generations now. And so I'm running to bring true servant leadership back to the state house. Listen to everybody. Can't make everybody happy. Humanly impossible. But I can listen to everybody and work to develop policies that will move everybody up the ladder if they're willing to work hard for it.
Are you going to be spending a lot of time in Chicago and Cook County to get to know some of the voters here?
I quite frankly am going to be spending a lot of time all over the state. Obviously, I will be in the northeastern part of the state, Chicago and Cook County, the suburbs, but also downstate. There's this other part of Illinois that some folks have heard about and some folks haven't. But for those of us who are from those other 96 or so counties, such as myself, there's a lot of wonderful people who are also looking for some opportunity and to be heard, to be listened to, and to have their ideas carried to the seat of government on behalf of themselves. So I plan on being in all parts of the state.
Yeah, outside of Chicago, there's the state called Illinois, right?
Exactly.
So the choice, I mean, you're an independent candidate. It's an independent candidacy. There's no established conservative party, right? So, but you chose that banner to run under the conservative party. Why?
because I've always considered myself a conservative. I've always voted Republican, but by and large, 99% of the time, I have voted Republican. That's one of the reasons I chose to run as a Republican back in the 2010 cycle. But I really identify more as a Christian, an American, an Illinoisan, a husband, and a father first, before party. You know, most people have gotten it. I shouldn't say most people, but it seems like a lot of people have gotten more religious about their politics than they are their religion. They're more they're more devoted to a party than they are to the country or the Constitution. So I'm a conservative, and I believe that the Republican Party could be the conservative party of the state if the leadership of the Republican Party would lead its own platform and follow it.
Well, speaking of leadership, so, the leadership of the country, President Trump, are you a Trump supporter?
I am. You'll notice I didn't say the National Republican Party. I said the Illinois Republican Party. You're right. I think the National Republican Party is doing pretty well, especially under the leadership of President Trump. It's the Illinois Republican Party under, I guess we could call it leadership. I could probably come up with a few other words. I'm not sure I could use them on the radio to describe what we've had for the last few years, when it comes out of the highest portions of the hierarchy of the Illinois Republican Party. I mean, we have an Illinois Republican governor, a Republican governor who refuses to meet with or utter the name of the Republican president. After 8 years of Obama, we get a Republican president, now we have a Republican governor, and he won't even say his name. He's afraid to say his name because he doesn't stand for anything that the Republican platform stands for. I don't even know why Madigan and the Chicago Machine are running Pritzker or anyone else. I think Bruce Brown has been probably one of the finest progressive governors that the state of Illinois has ever had. They've gotten more accomplished under Rauner than they could have ever dreamed of accomplishing under Blagojevich or Quinn or if Pritzker were to win.
With respect to your candidacy, you know conspiracy theories abound, right? That you're a Madigan plant. You're put up as a third-party candidate to take votes away from Pritzker to ensure his victory, that you're being financed by the public sector unions, with which you do have a close relationship. You have taken money from the public sector unions. A lot of Republicans have. Not something I encourage, but that's a fact. And so how do you address those theories that you're, you know, doing somebody else's bidding and you're backed by the public sector unions and essentially the Democrats?
First of all, I'm doing this, as I said earlier, as a calling. I believe it's the right thing to do. I believe my state needs me. I believe my family needs me to step up as the head of my family. I believe my community needs me. I believe my county needs me. I believe my state needs me. Not because I'm the most qualified person for the job in Illinois. I don't believe I am. I think there are plenty of more qualified people to be governor of Illinois, and he would do a fantastic job. Unfortunately, none of them stood up. The only other two guys who have stood up, I don't believe would do a better job. I believe I can do a better job than the two main candidates at this point who have stood up. So to address all of that, I haven't received any, again, as you pointed out, Dan, many, many Republicans, especially downstate Republicans where the state facilities are, have taken contributions from public sector unions. And first of all, just because somebody gives me a contribution doesn't mean that that's how I'm going to vote. That's offensive, quite frankly. That's offensive, right? I mean, you brought this up in our last interview. You know, there have been several votes that I have not voted the way unions have wanted me to vote, or business have wanted me to vote. Maybe a business entity gave me a contribution, and I didn't vote the way they. My vote isn't for sale. The office isn't for sale. If you want to support me with a check, that's great. I appreciate it. But at the end of the day, I'm going to use my 4C formula to figure out how I'm going to vote, and I'll take this same formula to the second floor of the Capitol building. And first comes the Constitution. If it's not constitutional, I don't even go to the next 3Cs, and then the next one comes down to my conscience, my constituents, or the people, and then the 4C is a healthy dose of common sense. So that's how I vote. So that being said, how do I address these people who say that this is public sector unions? Well, guess what? I haven't received any contribution or really any contact from public sector unions in a long, long time. In case you haven't been paying attention, they've endorsed Pritzker, as I told you the last time we interviewed 2 months ago, that they would, and they have. Mm-hmm. I assumed they would, and they did. The only the only entity, the only union entity that I've gotten any support from in this run is Local 150. And I'm thankful, thank God, they have given me that support. And for all the conservatives listening out there, if you would like to change that dynamic and add something to the mix, we'll be happy to take that contribution.
And
remind us where we can make a contribution or what's your website?
McCannforIllinois.com, McCannforIllinois.com. Thank God that Local 150 realized that 50% of their union members are conservatives and or Republicans, and they want to give them a choice. They don't want to just give money to somebody that their members, half their membership, can't support. Thank God. I wish more organizations, whether they be organized labor or from the business community, if they would understand that this isn't just a binary choice. You know, the Constitution doesn't use the word Democrat, doesn't use the word Republican, doesn't use the term political party. The two major parties have made us believe that this is a binary choice. And why have they made us believe that? Because it benefits them to make us believe that. Nowhere in the Constitution, and I don't believe anywhere in the thought processes of the Founding Fathers, that they believe that this should ever come down to a binary choice where one guy is sitting at the top of one pyramid and another guy is sitting at the top of another pyramid, and they're each amassing power unto themselves. This should be about a government of, by, and for the people, and by definition, it takes more than a two-party system. But the two-party system is, we talk about how we need a two-party system. We've had a one-party system in Illinois too long. No, we've had a two-party system. That's the problem in Illinois. It's not broken. It's fixed.
Yeah, someone once
fixed it a long time ago, right? They fixed it a long time ago.
We're out
to unfix it.
Yeah, just to establish a baseline. Local 150 operating engineers. It's one of the trade unions. So Sam, if you're not going to be supported by the public sector unions because they're with Spalding, and if you're not going to be supported by the billionaire class that's more inclined to be with Rahner to the extent they participate at all, how do you, you know, put together the resources necessary to run a competitive campaign? Or is the goal here just to establish the Conservative Party as a third party candidate, a third party party, so you can lower the ballot access requirements and have Conservative Party candidates running into the future? What's the goal here?
What you just said there is the alternative is a secondary goal. That it is, but it is not the primary goal. The primary goal in the 2018 cycle is to become, for myself to become governor and Aaron Marine to become lieutenant governor of the state of Illinois. Aaron is my running mate. We believe that this state cannot withstand four more years of the combine's control. Now, it would be nice that as a secondary goal, if we can lower that threshold for third parties to get on the ballot, that is awesome. That is a fantastic benefit.
And what's the background of your running mate?
He is actually a combat Marine Corps veteran. He currently works for the state of Illinois at the Department of Revenue. He is an Dan, this comes back to, you know, I remember you and I having a conversation in Macoupin. Actually, I think where we were at was right on the Macoupin-McHenry County line at the Holiday Inn, the old Holiday Inn there at Litchfield, and when you were running for governor back in 2010. And I remember asking you your stance on right to work, and you told me at that time that you weren't for right to work because you didn't particularly care for public sector unions. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. As you might imagine, yesterday and today have been a little busy, and I apologize. That you weren't necessarily overly enthused about public sector unions, but you thought the trade unions had some real benefit and some real benefit to the conservative movement. That being said, in downstate Illinois, all over the state, in all portions of the state, but I would say probably more heavily concentrated in downstate, Aaron is a very, very typical downstate conservative. He's a veteran. He's very conservative in his social views. He's very conservative in his fiscal views. He works for the state of Illinois. They have a veterans preference hiring program. He got a job with the state of Illinois. He's a member of AFSCME because, guess what? You know, guys like, you know, he and I have had conversations over the last year or two. And as he has said to me, you know, I wasn't altogether sure about whether I should pay the dues or not. that once Bruce Rauner came along, it really proved to me to clean Pat Quinn. So think about this, and I want everyone to think about this, regardless of where your political leanings are. 4 years ago, total Democratic control. Pat Quinn was governor. Madigan was Speaker of the House. Cullerton was president of the Senate. Who was going after the pensions at that time? It was them. It was the total Democratic control, legislative and executive branch, that were going after the public sector pensions. The public sector unions were fighting them daily. Now we have Bruce Rauner. So what guys like Aaron know is that if they didn't have collective bargaining, they really would be up the creek. And then what I would like other folks listening to think about is, you really think you're going to get something with Pritzker? Think back 4 short years ago. Was it the pension python?
Squeezy, the pension python. Sure, I miss Squeezy terribly.
The last time the Democrats, the Chicago Democrats, had total control of the governor's office and the legislative branch, they were the ones coming after your pension. They were the ones coming after the... They're the ones who withheld your raise that you had to go to court to fight for, that you just now get it. We offer a real option for all working people, whether you're union or non-union, public sector or private sector, blue collar, white collar, gray collar, retired, aspiring. If you're a working person, we're for you. And in my humble opinion, that should be the mantra of the Republican Party. The Republican Party wants nothing to do with that because they've been bought out by the billionaire class. So now we're going to form the new Conservative Party and carry that winning message straight to victory on November the 6th.
All right. He is Sam McCann, a state senator who's running for governor under the Conservative Party banner, filed yesterday. The website, McCannForIllinois.com. One slight correction, just in terms of our conversation at the Holiday Inn back in Litchfield back in the day. What I said was I wasn't going to prioritize right to work because I don't think the ground had been made fertile for it, and because I do think the Republican Party needs to do a better job of reaching out to trade unionists in this state. And frankly, Rauner proved that the ground wasn't fertile for it when he went on his right to work resolution gambit as his first order of business as governor, and he destroyed a lot of his political capital by doing so. So there's an art to politics as well, and that's something else that Rauner turned out not to be a good practitioner.
Yeah, and I respect that. I wasn't trying to...
No, I understand. I understand. I just want to clarify. Yeah. Yeah. State Senator Sam McCann, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Amy. God bless you. I appreciate it.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer. On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. You know how the CPS sex abuse scandal is over because Irish Ed Burke set up a hotline in his ward.
Oh, that's right.
For people to lodge anonymous complaints. Finally, some real action. Well, Chicago violence is coming to an end. It's, I'm happy to report, it's under 2 weeks away, because on July 7th of 2018, buses shall leave St. Sabina Parish at 9:30 a.m.
Oh, no.
They will arrive at 79th and the Dan Ryan at 9:45 a.m. They will shut down the Dan Ryan.
Oh, on a Saturday when everybody, you know, going to their Michigan homes. Okay.
They will shut down the Dan Ryan to protest and ostensibly end Chicago violence. Thank you, Father Michael Flager, from the Archie cartoon series.
They're going to put themselves in peril and shut down the main artery into and out of the city.
Here's the only thing that I think that Father Flager in particular may not have contemplated. So I just want to throw this out there. I appreciate that he is ending Chicago violence. I thought that the midnight vigils would do it.
Well, what about the midnight basketball?
I thought that would do it. I thought the bullhorn at the Thompson Center would do it. I think this is going to do it. I think this is the one. But here's the thing he's not thinking about, I think. If I see Father Flager on the Dan Ryan, do I slow down?
You can never hit somebody. You're always to blame. pedestrians always have the right of way. But here's the thing.
Pedestrians have the right of way on the Dan Ryan?
Not on the Dan Ryan. That's why you don't see bikes. There's no cycling lanes on the Dan Ryan. But here's the
thing.
I don't see
any crosswalks.
If somebody gets shot, just saying, what if? Because that rarely happens. Dan Ryan is the main thoroughfare to get to a trauma one level center, Christ Hospital, because that's on 95th Street. But if you block off the Dan Ryan, it's 79th there or 74th. That's a bit of a problem.
Well, that's a good point. I hadn't even contemplated that. I'm sure Flager hasn't either because, of course, he's just a virtue signaling demagogue hack.
What if there's a fire and that's the quickest way to get to the fire? And then you've got people in the Dan Ryan Expressway. They should shut that down before that even begins. They should stop the buses at St. Sabina.
Should they shut down the shutdown of the Dan Ryan? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Will you be joining Father Flager?
No, they should all get tickets and be thrown in jail.
Will you be joining Father Flager to lie down in the Dan Ryan for as the means to end Chicago violence? Or will you be with Amy protesting St. Sabina and asking the Chicago police to shut down the shutdown?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. What would you do, Dan? Are you with me or are you with Flager?
I'll be at my Michigan home.
Oh, is it? But you can't get to your Michigan home unless you take... No. Well, yeah, no.
Well, or that's a problem. Unless you leave early. unless you leave before 9:30.
Yeah, but I mean, that's... If you've been on the Dan Ryan on a Saturday, I have. It's packed with cars.
Yeah, especially July 4th weekend.
I know.
People are going to be, you know, bouncing around traveling. All right.
No, they'll make sure you don't have fun on the 4th of July weekend.
By the way, Amy has a musical tribute to this effort by Father Flager, so you're going to want to stay tuned for that. I know you enjoyed my musical stylings yesterday with the...
Yours was so awful, my ears were bleeding.
I've gotten a lot of reaction to my performance. Well, and that's the important thing, is the audience feedback, which I enjoy. I did a rendition of the Canadian National Anthem in celebration of their marijuana legalization, being the first G7 country to legalize marijuana. And my lyricist, the captain to my tenille, Rob Badgley, sent in some new lyrics. You've got lyrics from Mike from the North Side.
Yeah, I got a little ditty here.
All right.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to do it now.
No, you're going to warm up.
Paula Clark's Downtown, and he changed the words to reference all the violence that's going on.
Bill in Lincoln Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yes, I wonder how the Teamsters are going to take that for their trucks being held up, and we sort of know who backs up the Teamsters.
Okay, thanks for the call, Bill.
You're on notice.
Well, the other thing is true. You could stop, get out of the car, and, you know, pull people over to the side of the road if they're going to play dead.
Addressing violence.
It's a die-in on the Dan Ryan. You know, like you've seen the die-ins, the Black Lives Matter die-ins. It's a die-in on the Dan Ryan.
That is so irresponsible.
It's alliterative.
What kind of crime is it? That's a crime. They should be, everyone who throws himself out there should be ticketed.
Father Flager doing something irresponsible? Jeez, that doesn't sound like him. Tom in Deer Park.
Oh, Father Flager, you've been at it for 30 years. You vexed Cardinal Bernardine, you vexed Cardinal George, and now you got a cardinal that's right on board with you. So, you know, it really fits into the leftist narrative, and it's all about you, Father Flager. And I just wish you'd stop. You're an embarrassment to the Catholics.
He is an embarrassment. Thanks for the call, Tom. He should have been defrocked long ago. And also, too, I mean, just in terms
of... He makes money.
The community leaders, right? I mean, these are our longtime civic leaders. He's a part of the power structure in the city as the Cornish Democrats that run it. So how's Father Flager's record? How's it been going there, reducing violence, increasing the peace on the streets, especially around St. Sabina? What's happened around St. Sabina over the last 30 years, Father?
I mean, his heart's in the right place. I'm not a Father Flager basher, but this is not the way to get your message across.
The road to hell and good intentions. Bob in Midway, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, Dan and Amy. How you doing?
Good.
You know, you're giving him a... don't call him Father. He's a phony priest. I don't know what he is, but this has been going on forever with him. His marches, this and that. What is that going to do? Blocking the Dan Ryan. I have no idea.
He's asking for 1,000 people to join him Again, at 10 a.m., they're going to walk down the northbound entrance ramp at 79th Street and walk about a mile and a half. Oh, my gosh. Before exiting at Marquette Road, 67th Street.
Yeah, right.
It's incredibly stupid.
A mile and a half.
Actually, what they should do is when he comes out there, the paddy wagon should pull up.
Yep.
And they should just throw him in the back of it and drive him away because that's where he belongs. Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
thanks,
and it's
Bob.
Called Enough is Enough Peace Now. You can go to their stsabina.org and get all the details.
You think,
really, they should sit there armed. Police should be armed, as they always are. The police should be arm in arm, too, like physically, and make sure that they do not get on that northbound exit ramp.
Yeah. I mean, do you think this parade is going to end the violence, do you think, the protest?
No. And they're actually putting their lives in danger by walking down the Dan Ryan because there's a lot of expressway shootings lately.
John in Lombard, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, man has been fighting man for 10,000 years now. And I stand here and I declare down with violence. I didn't know it was that easy. We can all live in peace now.
All right. Thanks, John. Appreciate that. I mean, that's the Father Flager approach. Maybe a novelty T-shirt to memorialize the protest. That'll help, too. Because it, you know, makes it real front and center, really raises the consciousness of the public. But, you know, 56 shootings a weekend, 1,300 shootings so far, almost 300 murders so far this year. That does it. But Father Flager's little march is going to do it. Okay. Bill in LaSalle County.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I think maybe we ought to hand them shovels and blacktop patch or just have them fill in the potholes with their bodies.
Well, that's a good idea. Make use. Thanks for the call, Bill. Make the time productive. That's public service.
Or they could, you know, pick up the garbage along the shoulder of the road.
They could do that, too.
There's some tailpipes I saw over there that Saturday.
There's potholes, though, too, that need to be fixed.
Not as bad as some other expressways, but okay.
The whole city's falling apart. The whole place is going to hell.
Yeah, right.
Perry and Niles, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi. This is what he's doing. He's competing with the crime that's always leading the news.
Mm-hmm.
So how does he bring attention to all this crime when it's already like five shootings and then an arson and a hit and run? Why doesn't he just go home and let the crime lead the news?
Yeah, he's committing a crime by bringing 1,000 people onto a main thoroughfare, an expressway.
Thanks for the call, Perry.
Shutting it down. That's a crime.
This is him feeling good about himself. He's a leftist. He's a virtue signaler. He's a demagogue. This is what they do. He's not a solutionist. He's not looking to solve the problem. He's looking to have people look at him and celebrate how much he cares about the problem.
And everyone keep calling in so I don't have to sing. 312-642-5600.
No, we'll cut into Gallagher if necessary.
Oh, look at the time.
Dan in Evanston.
Oh, hi. Yeah, just to join the party here, I would think a good idea perhaps is to have a sit-in, a human log jam surrounding St. Sabina's parking lot in protest of demagoguery.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks for the call, Dan. We could do a die-in in the parking lot of St. Sabina in front of the buses.
Oh, to stop them from...
You can make up the T-shirts.
What?
Stop St. Sabina's...
Crime?
Die-in. The die-in to stop the die-in.
You know, but that's one thing I can't stand about protesters from being a reporter for 18 years. They always seem to block the wrong streets where ambulances need to get through to, say, Northwestern Memorial Hospital. And, you know, they don't think about other people. That's my point of contention.
Imagine that. Don in Arlington Heights.
Good morning, everybody. I'm a Roman Catholic in Arlington Heights at St. James. If Father Flagler wants to march, apply for a parade permit and come up Western Avenue. If not, you should be arrested and spend Saturday night in county jail. Have a nice day, everybody.
All right, thanks, Don.
It's true. I'm with him.
Pat in Lockport.
Public safety issue.
Hello?
Hey, Pat, you're on.
Yes, I would like to say, instead of blocking the traffic and inconveniencing a bunch of people, Father should get himself up in the pulpit and start preaching about the sanctity of the family and the role that fathers and mothers play so that these kids who are joining gangs have a feeling of belonging and being loved. And heaven forbid those children with a woman should all have the same father. My God, what an original concept. Mm. That's where the problem lies. I'm sorry, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Pat. It's fair. Anne in Chicago.
Oh, thanks for taking my call and good morning. Yes, I wanted to tell Father Flager that the body's overflowing in the morgue. It's our duty as Catholics, as Christians, to bury the dead. Why isn't he, you know, people are murdered and then they're thrown like a piece of trash. They have to be buried, and he should be the first one to exercise the burial. You should give him a big dignified burial.
All right. Bring out your dad. Thanks for the call, Ann. I'm not dead. All right.
Okay, look at the time.
All right. No. We've got Nate. Yeah. Justin has carved out some time for you. So in honor of this topic that we're talking about in Chicago violence, let's cue it up and let's see if Amy does a better job with downtown than I did with the Canadian National Anthem. I doubt it.
Okay. This is
all right.
I'm just warning you.
Lyrics by Mike from the North Side.
When you're alone, you're better off staying home. Don't you ever come downtown.
Well,
don't make the jury. You'll wind up in a gurney. It is not safe to come downtown. Avoid all the traffic and all the crime and vile. You will lose your wallet and your iPhone on Magmile. What can you do? The crime is much higher here. Wait, crime is here. You don't stand a chance, cause Rom, he don't care. Don't come downtown. You are not safe. Oh, boy. I can't read this next line. Blank, 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 blank.
Of course, Mike on the North Side.
Gangbanger's waiting for you.
Are you talk singing now? Come on. This is a train wreck.
This is god-awful.
I like some of those lyrics. Come on, keep going. Pick it up. It's your one audition.
Downtown, you'll get nickeled and dimed by the darn city council. Downtown, protect your wife and daughter. The police have no power. Don't get pushed in the water or beaten up at Water Tower. Happy Rom, don't come downtown. You are not safe. Life ain't fair, and Rom just don't care when you're down.
Nice run, nice run. Now we got it.
Down. I don't want to see the rest. Come on, Dan, jump in. Down. The ganger bangers are waiting for you. All right, we just got to stop. I'm exhausted.
So here's what I would say. And I think our listeners will agree with me.
I should have practiced. You're
slightly better singer than I am. Slightly better.
I was off. It's pitchy.
But my guy Rob Badgley is a better lyricist than Mike from the North Side. Although he had a couple of good, couplets
ones.
In there. Yeah.
You see those guys do a drive by in a pimped out Range Rover? You'll be bleeding out there too before your trip is over. Happy Rom. The crime is much worse here. Don't bother dialing 911 because Rom, he just don't care.
911 is a joke in your town. Mike on the North Side, of course, the founder of the LGBT party, the Love, Guns, Bacon, and Trump party. Thank you for that contribution to the show.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. The Civil War is already upon us, guys. It's been upon us for a while. We'll talk about it when freedom returns at 5.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I'm not sure the Civil War is upon us quite yet, but getting a little tense, and we're having putative, substantive discussions around questions like, should Sarah Sanders be allowed to exist in civil society without harassment? I'm not kidding. This was the deep thinkers on Morning Joe that batted this one around, including, of course, because she's a journalist, objective NBC journalist Elisa Jordan.
Yeah. I'm not very familiar with her work.
She tried to answer the question whether Sarah Sanders belongs in civil society, and she's leaning against it.
And even that Sarah Sanders had over the weekend, which is a absolutely legitimate problem. But who cares?
But it goes back to the anger over
Plenty of Americans know that they are being lied to constantly, mm-hmm. and they want the truth. And should someone who lies constantly and enables the president's lies be openly welcomed in society wherever they please? Should they face any kind of social or societal pressure? I'm increasingly weighing towards yes, even though I'm all about civility. Sure. But I do think that there are choices, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders has made her choices, and she has decided to constantly give false information from that podium to the American taxpayers who are paying her salary. Donald Trump has chosen to do that. Facts matter. The context that we present the facts matter. And this is not going away because we have thousands of children who have been separated from their parents, and we don't even know the full magnitude of it.
Counsel on Foreign Relations President Richard Haass was part of that panel, and he provided what constitutes pushback on that program, saying this about the trajectory of the country per the Sanders incident.
What happened the other day violates the spirit of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And what it doesn't mean we shouldn't be focusing on other things which are inherently more important. I hear you. But it just seems to me, one, besides that, it's politically counterproductive. Totally. I think your point's the big point. This is a descent of America into tribalism. And this is dangerous. One of the things we should have learned the last year and a half is we can't take things for granted in this country.
Right.
We should not take for granted the fact that this has essentially been a peaceful democracy, and our differences have never gotten bigger than what we could handle in a peaceful way. This is the sort of thing that makes me uneasy about some of the trajectory of this country.
Yeah, I mean, things have never gotten bigger that we couldn't handle them in a peaceful way. I mean, except for the Civil War. But for more on this topic and to answer the question, should we clean out the family detention centers and put all the political flacks who lie for their bosses into them?
Right.
Internment camps for lying political flacks to increase the civility and ostensibly the peace, per Maxine Waters. We're pleased to be joined by David French, writer at National Review, constitutional lawyer, author, veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom. David, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
What about that? Should Sarah Sanders be the first sent off to the gulag for not telling the public the whole truth?
You know, I had this bizarre world experience yesterday when I was debating somebody on NPR about this very issue. And the point I made was, look, you can march, you can vote, you can sue, you can tweet, you can Facebook, you can raise money or send money to the people that are doing all of those things. But, you know, when you cross the line into personal, and now the story is that it wasn't so polite that Sanders was asked to leave. And apparently, according to her dad anyway, the owner then chased her across the street and started berating the people, berating the folks she was with at the next restaurant they attended. But when you cross the line and you're doing like what happened to Sarah Sanders, apparently now not just being asked to leave, but getting heckled, Kirstjen Nielsen getting heckled directly, personally, and even outside her home, Pam Bondi, three large men get inches from her face and start screaming at her. She's the Attorney General of Florida. I said, when you're crossing that line, you're doing two things. One, you're creating a dangerous situation, because I'm sorry, when people get up in your personal space and they're furious and they're angry, that creates danger. That's a tense. It creates danger. And then the other thing you're doing as you're creating these dangerous situations, which could spiral into violence, is you're creating a dangerous situation for the state of our country, for the polarization of our country. And when I was saying this, the very next thing that people kept saying, you know, callers and others, well, they need to be opposed. They need to be opposed. And I said, well, did you not hear what I said?
Right.
You can march, you can vote, you can petition, you can sue. But when it starts to get this up close and personal and this vicious up close and personal, that's dangerous. It's just flat out dangerous.
Well, calling for harassment, you know, for Trump's cabinet members and people that surround themselves with President Trump, that's not American, and that's not who we are. But the left seems to claim that President Trump started this wave of uncivility.
Well, look, if they're going to say that Trump started it, that's just completely ignoring recent history. I mean, it wasn't Trump that was that started the way. And if they're even pinning it on, well, we're being aggressive to oppose Trump. Well, what about Charles Murray at Middlebury when he was physically attacked for trying to deliver a lecture about class divisions in the United States of America, or Heather McDonald, who faced physical violence trying to block people from hearing her speech at Claremont College in California, or Ben Shapiro facing physical violence in Los Angeles when he was trying to deliver a lecture in California. I mean, you can go down the line that this trend towards very personal, very vicious, very aggressive tactics did not start with Trump. And look, I'm no apologist for Trump on this point. I mean, especially in his rallies when he was a candidate, it was vicious. And some of his people and how they embraced the alt-right, like Steve Bannon, was inexcusable. So I'm no apologist for Trump here. But I'm sorry, the left doesn't get the excuse of saying, well, we were awesome until Trump came along and now it's special.
Yeah.
No, this is a problem that predated Donald Trump.
Well, your colleague in National Review, Kyle Smith, I thought had a good piece. It sort of is of a kind that Andrew Sullivan wrote a couple of months ago, I think, in The New Yorker about we all live on a college campus now. And that's the argument that Kyle Smith makes. He writes that when absolutely everything is political, it makes sense to harass your opponents while they eat. One of the most exhilarating aspects of youth is that everything matters so deeply. One of the rewards of adulthood is leaving campus urgency behind. So do we have sort of an arrested development problem in the American culture?
Yes. I mean, I think that that's absolutely the case. And you know, I remember 20 years ago speaking because I was working on trying to defend religious liberty and free speech in college campuses and saying, This is a problem. And the answer I would constantly get back was, well, when these kids go into the real world, everything will be okay. And what if they change the real world? You know, what if they leave college and change the real world? And so now what we see is entire industries are run essentially like they're, you know, the Harvard Faculty Lounge. I mean, you know, try being a conservative openly at Google in certain circumstances. Look at the ideological landscape in Silicon Valley. Look at the ideological landscape in much of the media. Look at the ideological landscape in Hollywood. The customs and manners and mores and habits of the campus activists have transferred fully into corporate America now. And of course, they're all over the place online. It's even worse online. And so, yeah, I think Kyle's piece was most definitely on point.
I wanted to, get your reaction to this. Norm Ornstein. All right. So this is not Maxine Waters. Here's one of the things I think Trump has provided in terms of maybe an unintended benefit. And I don't think this is the only one, but he has shown to me that there is not as much daylight between an AEI scholar, quote unquote, like Norm Ornstein, and someone like Maxine Waters. And I submit for evidence this reaction that Ornstein had to the Supreme Court's decision yesterday in a couple of gerrymandering cases in Texas and North Carolina. He said, I choose my words carefully. Alito, Roberts, Kennedy, Gorsuch, Thomas are the Bull Connors of jurisprudence. They are consciously bringing back Jim Crow. Clarence Thomas, who lived on the wrong side of Jim Crow, is bringing back Jim Crow because, as the Wall Street Journal editorial board opined on the decision by the court, the court's opinion reversed the opinion of the lower court, which was in effect the racial gerrymandering is constitutional as long as liberals are doing it. So apparently the Wall Street Journal editorial board also comprised of a bunch of Jim Crow cheerleaders. And by the way, I saw Norm Ornstein speak. He spoke to a group of civilians that attended the U.S. Army War College when I was there in 2009. And he gushed over Obama, as George Will did initially. And he couldn't have been proven more wrong by history. But I mean, the exposure of these jilted intellectuals who have adopted the rhetoric of the unhinged left, I think provides a service.
Well, it is pretty stunning to see the level, to see the lack of proportion, the lack of perspective, the lack of historical knowledge. I mean, you know, here we have Nancy Pelosi last week was calling after Donald Trump reversed his course on child separation. After that, she was calling the policy of family detention child abuse. Well, that happened to be the policy of the Obama administration. And it was the policy of the Obama administration until the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals made them stop in 2016. So this is something that Obama was doing right up until the end of his presidency. And there were reasons for it, because you don't have good options absent family detention as to what to do to secure the border in any way, shape, or form. But now, you know, once again, we're in a position where rhetoric is outpacing reality at a stunning rate. And it is really feeding on itself now, because one of the things about social media is that the more extreme you get, the more followers you're going to get, the more likes, the more retweets. And when that happens, it's, you know, it's its own, it constitutes its own reward. It elevates your voice. It elevates your prominence. And so we're beginning to reach a point where people in the U.S. with some of the largest followings are being incentivized to constantly get more hysterical. And you know, one of the things about this notion that, well, you know, we're so frustrated and defeated and the only option we have is to get into somebody's face is so absurd. I mean, the checks and balances of this country still exist. And in fact, the policies that they've hated the most from Trump, the first edition of the travel ban, the child separation policy, those policies have actually been changed substantially or reversed entirely through the normal workings of the political system. And so this idea that we're in some sort of special case scenario where you can't, all the normal instruments of democracy aren't working, so what we now have to do is initiate vicious personal confrontations, is just, it's wrong. It's completely wrong. The normal mechanisms of democracy and American checks and balances still work. There is no need to resort to these potentially violent confrontations.
He is David French, writer over at National Review, nationalreview.com, constitutional lawyer, author, and veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom. David, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
So the latest casualty in the rewrite of history, Laura Ingalls Wilder, the left-wing American Library Association, voted to remove her name from a children's book award over concerns how she portrayed Indians in her Little House on the Prairie stories.
Oh, my God. Are they going to take Little House on the Prairie reruns off of TV Land now, too? Because we live in such a politically correct world.
I'm just glad Michael Landon long before went on the highway to heaven and is not here to see this. I understand they're going to rename the award in honor of somebody who celebrates Native Americans, Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, God. Also, too, Heather Locklear just checked into rehab, because, in case you're wondering where your ex-girlfriend is. Yeah. And Russell Crowe is going to be playing Roger Ailes on the Showtime show.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.